This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, New Year's resolutions can feel overwhelming when they're about reinventing yourself. But the new year doesn't require a new you, maybe just a less burdened you. And therapy can be a powerful tool for that. It can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back through an unbiased perspective, so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And that understanding can lead to real change. For me, one of the things I'm always working to let go of is the pressure to have everything figured out all the time. Personally, professionally, creatively, that idea that you're supposed to always be moving forward with total clarity, that can be heavy. Learning how to unpack where that pressure comes from, that can make a real difference. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. You can just fill out a short questionnaire about your needs and preferences, and they do the matching work for you. With over 12 years of experience, more than 30,000 therapists, over 5 million people served worldwide, they typically get it right the first time. And if they don't, you can switch to another therapist from their tailored recommendations. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
What? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With, an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from today, please do hit the subscribe button right now. And if it's a place where you can leave a rating or a review like iTunes or Podchaser, go ahead and do that as well. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Graham Coxon. You know him as the guitarist from Blur. He's also had a long solo career. In fact, we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary of his debut solo record, The Sky Is Too High, and his most recent release, which is the scoring of the television show The End of the World. Aside from that, of course, we're also going to talk about Blur quite a bit, and he lets us in on some new stuff that he's working on, a concept piece and an unreleased record. Dig in. It's Kyle Meredith with Graham Coxon of Blur.
Hello, Kyle.
Hey, Graham. How are you?
I'm all right.
Well, I hope you don't mind. I know we got a lot to talk about here, and part of it has us into the time machine, heading back to 1998, because I was noticing that your first solo record turns 20 years old this year. The Sky Is Too High.
That's
something?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about it until someone said. I had no idea. I don't know whether it's because it's like a totally different life or a different me, or I couldn't possibly imagine it would be 20 years, but yeah, it kind of feels like 20 years ago.
Well, you know, I'll start with the big picture. What comes to mind when you think about that record? Because looking back on it, I mean, you put that out right at the height of Blur mania, at least in America, as it was.
Yeah, I suppose it was an awkward period for me. I had no intention of ever writing solo material. I kind of the beginnings of that album and probably the beginnings of me writing any kind of songs for myself outside of Blur was that a friend of mine had an idea for a film. He was writing a script and he said, look, it'd be great if you could, because you're in that Blur band, you know, it'd be great if you could write a couple of songs for my for this film. And I was like, yeah, well, God, I've never done that really before, but I'll give it a go. And what happened is that the film never got made, but it kicked me off writing songs. So it was a kind of good one. And there's We Two, You, Me, We, no, Me, You, We Two, and A Day Is Far Too Long. And I wrote those two songs first with this film in mind. So I wouldn't have ever written any solo stuff if it wasn't for him saying, could you write a couple of songs for this film I want to make one day? So there you go.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I listen back to it, especially comparing it to your recent scoring and film work that we'll get to here in a moment, this would have worked with that type of scoring. You know, it's lo-fi, it's sort of smaller songs, you know, that work in a, not a background sort of way, but could definitely help the scene along. That's really interesting that that's the way it came about.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't. I mean, I was interested in experimenting with sounds, really, I suppose. The words and the songs and things like that were secondary. So it was really simple poetry, you know, and that was it, really. Just I didn't really think much about it. I was playing the acoustic guitar a little bit on it. I really didn't know what I was doing. And I had a guitar or two, but the thing is, I discovered a lot of music. I discovered a lot of really good stuff. I discovered a lot of American punk rock. A lot of mainly American stuff, you know. I really delved into Sonic Youth, Pavement, Minutemen, and also things like Smog was an influence, because he seemed to be a really like advocate of like just bloody just doing the song, you know, just whatever, record it, you know. Pavement's first album, it was just like, well, you've got a song, record it. You don't have to do a huge budget on it, you know. There was other groups like Yola Tango, which and all of this collectively, when I was listening to it on tour and listening to it, you know, in Altered States, listening to it really nice and together and sober, and just really, I really got really imbued with, I suppose, that ethic and just simple little sentences that come from the heart with a little bit of music going with it, sort of. That's just kind of what happened, you know. And I did invite Damon to listen to some of it. I was like, you know, if you think any of this stuff could be good for Blur songs, then we can use it. And, you know, he visited me in the studio when I was toward the end of recording, and I played him a couple of things. He was like, no, it's great, you just do it. I don't think we'll be needing any of this for Blur.
There was always sort of a thing out there, and you still see it in, if you go back and listen to read some of the reviews of it, where people had said that this was sort of the type of album that you wish Blur, the self-titled Blur, would have been with this type of music. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I guess in a way we did in the end, you know, with the Blur album. I think I kind of won in a way, influence-wise, on that, because we did get a bit of Tortoise kind of sound in there. We got a kind of Beckish kind of like hobo slacker thing, whatever it's called. I hate categorizing, but you know what I mean. And we got a bit of like Pavement type stuff, you know, because the rest of the band didn't like this. I drove the rest of Blur absolutely crazy on tour with this music, like blasting out Pavement and, you know, One Foot in the Grave, that really early Beck album, and Spiderland by Slint and stuff like this. I drove them absolutely mad with it. But really, on that album, I managed to get a lot of that kind of American influence, I guess, into it. I don't know whether it's obvious, but really, all of the time, the American guitar players were influencing me a lot more. The English guitar players at the time were really boring, really dull. And I can hear Two Hearts Beat as One by Yola Tango and Spiderland and Slanted and Enchanted. Changed my life hearing that stuff. Yeah. And I was like, wow, people are doing such good stuff with guitars. And I guess I wanted to just experiment with noise. It's just not appropriate for Blur. You know, Blur was doing its thing. And when Blur played live, maybe I would go a little bit heavier on the guitars and the experimentation and pick my moments to get my revenge sonically. But in the studio, you know, it was good. Blur was blur. I mean, I wanted to make some experimental, other kind of, and not so experimental, just little songs that yeah. really couldn't be a part of it. You know, it was not like I wanted Blur to be doing this music. It's just that I had stuff that wasn't appropriate for Blur to make. You know, much the same as some Gorillaz songs for Damon I heard when we were in Blur, and they just didn't work with Blur. So a demo he had made didn't work for Blur. He kept the demo, and it worked for something else, you know, when he was working on his own or with somebody else. So it's just the thing, the song has to fit the band, you know.
Well, there's so many good moments in that little record. I'd really love listening to Who the Fuck. It's really different than the rest, you know.
Yeah.
It's a cool listen, that whole record.
I mean, yeah, I am really demonstrating my total Mardas attitude. Mardas is a sort of someone in a, you know, a grumpy, spoiled brat, really. Doing that song was quite fun because I just said, well, roll the tape, and then I just played the drums from beginning to end of the song, you know, with no click track or anything. I just played the drum part, you know, into silence or into microphone. And then I went ahead and put guitars over the top. So it's pretty loose, to say the least, yeah.
Well, we'll jump into the present here because, you know, as we're talking, as we mentioned earlier, you have been part of more scoring and soundtracking with the End of the Fucking World,
yeah.
Which came out earlier this year. What was the challenge like for that? Because it sounds like you sort of had a running start, but was this different? Was this his own beast?
Well, it kind of was. I always approach it. It's funny that people have said to me that it's kind of similar to your work you did earlier on in your solo stuff. And I guess it is, actually. And I suppose for the soundtrack, I was trying to get the sort of atmosphere of any scene and then making a mini song to fit. You know, I wasn't really doing it to picture to the action. I was doing it as if the songs had existed already and the guys who were making the TV program were choosing them. So there was some 60s sounding stuff, and there was some early 90s sounding stuff, there was some 80s sounding stuff, some 70s sounding stuff. But they're all like mini songs that you could dip into and use, you know. So there's a song called Angry Me, which was kind of meant to be a little bit more of a, like an early Beck kind of tune. And it's just, you know, sometimes I really liked the song and I extended the arrangement a bit, and I tried to play an organ solo in that one, but I can't really play the organ. So I got the kind of lead singer, which was me again, to kind of take the piss out of him, you know, because he can't play. So I'm trying to make it sound like a band that already existed that were kind of, you know, there's this really amazing track by the Velvet Underground called Temptation Inside of Your Heart. And there's a bit where they're just ad-libbing at the end and they're doing backing vocals and they're taking the piss out of each other. They're ribbing each other. And, you know, you don't sound like Martin and the Vandellas and shut up and all this kind of thing. And they're trying to, and he's commenting, Sterling Morrison is commenting on his own guitar solo as they're doing backing vocals. You know, it's kind of weird. So I took that idea in Angry Me towards the end where it's like, well, you know, do you actually even play the organ? And it's like, no. And, you know, there's a kind of a mini argument going on. And so I wanted them to create band imagery, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I guess they're all kind of short kind of fun size. In England, we have these chocolate bars that are not the normal size, and they're too small, and they'd always be disappointing, and they're called fun size.
Oh yeah, we have those. Like, yeah,
but they're not fun size at all. They're sort of like they're sort of fun size songs, you know. And then there was other ones that were more drawn out and a little more mature, maybe when I was getting out my lap seal and using a little tremolo arm and trying to get a kind of more Americana kind of style and some Link Ray, you know. So I like so much different types of music that I guess I can draw on so many influences.
Well, there's a lot to dig into. It's kind of a John Spencer vibe on the Prowl. And
oh, yeah. I love the old John Spencer music stuff. I love the Blues Explosion stuff.
I definitely got that vibe. Did you have to get into a teenage mindset for the lyrics to embody those characters?
Well, kind of. I mean, I'm kind of like that anyway. It's really, I don't know, it makes me think of people who I considered adult when I was a kid. If they were feeling anything like me at the time, then they weren't feeling like adults at all. You know, I still, maybe I'm very emotionally stunted. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm getting better these days, but it's very easy for me to get into that frame of mind, to get into the world is hurting me. She hates me. This kind of state of mind. It's really easy because I had so much of it when I was growing up, you know. And I don't know why, you know, I don't know why I had it. They call it a kind of a weird addictive type of mindset. Mm-hmm. where you know, you swing from one thing to the other. You don't want attention, but you need it. When you get attention, you hate it. And nothing is ever quite right in your head. So that's just how I am. I am naturally. I live with that constant buzz of embarrassment and awkwardness. So it comes through in the music in spades, if I allow it. But it's like the Walking All Day song. I mean, that's kind of like a little poem that I would have written maybe when I was 17, you know. They're kind of teenage-y lyrics. But, you know, some people were young and they were writing beautifully mature lyrics. I was watching John Martin and in the 70s, and he has a great maturity. Mm. When he's singing, and his songs are incredibly mature and beautiful. And yet he was a total puerile maniac when he wasn't inside his songs, you know. So I suppose we can all draw on experiences, and it's like acting. It's like what I've said it before. I think it was closer to acting for me, acting like an arty guy in a post-punk band, or acting like I was making some sort of cinematic Scott Walker style thing, or I was acting like, you know, a 21-year-old in 1992 for another song. And then there are the more pretty kind of songs that are acoustic, like Saturday Night and things like that, which are, and Something in the Way That You Cry, which is just really very naturally me. That's just the side of me, the sort of tenderness, you know. It depends what subject matter, but Something in the Way That You Cry, you know, very often people will think that they're written for a lover or a kind of girlfriend or something like that, but very often they're written about a toddler or a 6-year-old. And but it just translates very well. I mean, if you keep the lyrics vague enough, people just apply the emotions in the song to the people in their lives, and that's where it gains weight, I guess. Or there's that detached lyrics in the Bus Stop song, which is really, really like, I mean, that's a very familiar sound to a lot of people who like the late 70s kind of arty kind of post-punk stuff. And it's kind of, what is that, the kind of Leave Me Alone kind of thing, post-punk sort of lyric.
All right, well, I'm such a fan of it and of the soundtrack and of all your solo work. I don't think it gets in a big enough spotlight over here in America as it probably does in the UK, which has been a shame. There's definitely a lot of Blur talk still. And for what it's worth, The Magic Whip was a fantastic record. Well, one of my favorites of that year.
Thanks.
Do you want to do another record with Blur? Is that a desire at all?
Yeah, it's just these things just happen when they need to happen. There's no plans right now. But, you know, we all do different things, and then there's going to be one day when it hits us. Oh, that would be, seems like a good idea to do that now. And, you know, no one's doing anything particularly deep, and no one's that busy. And this sort of thought rears its ugly head, and it becomes a reality. I don't think these things can ever be forced into happening, because it just wouldn't work. Musicians, I think, when they're forced in that way, I don't think it's always a good thing. If they've known each other for a long, long time, they've got to really want to do it. Yeah. And so it's impossible to say yes and when, because these things just come out of nowhere. But I really don't think it. I really don't see why not. Why they can't be another Blur album? You know, we're all still alive and in reasonable control of our faculties. So. And it's just that time when the notion comes upon us all and the stars align, and then we go, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You know, well, it's just how it's always worked, really, with us.
I always look forward to when it does happen. What's next for you? What happens after this? Are you looking at more soundtracks or more solo work? I know Falling had come out last year, so.
Well, I'm always writing. I've been writing all year at home in my studio, and obviously that's why I'd sneaked out earlier on to look at some kind of compressor or something, you know. So I constantly kind of work. I'm in a bit of a lull right now. I've come to the end, I think, of a sort of a conceptual piece of recording, concept-wise. I think I've come to the end, and I'll do something with that at some point. Plus, I've got an album that has never been released, which has been sitting around for years. So hopefully that'll come out. And that was recorded same time as A&E. So hopefully that will come out at some point. And that's a nice kind of record. So I think people who like my stuff will like that, because it's very me-ish. It's kind of indie-ish and sort of 60s influenced. But they might like that. So I'm trying to get that out at some point. I'd like to go play some shows, stretch myself a bit, do the stuff that scares me to death, you know, like play some more intimate kind of shows with not an awful lot of amplification. That kind of thing would be sweet. And then, I don't know, but I mean, you know, there's stuff going on. There's stuff going on that I'm excited about that I don't want to talk too much about, because it's ruin surprise. But
sure. So
there's a couple of things going on, and it's good. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, I look forward to every one of them. I really do. And thank you, Graham, for taking the time to jump back in the Wayback Machine for a little bit here. I really do appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, bye.
Hey, thanks so much to Graham Coxon for giving me the call. His newest release, again, is the soundtrack to The End of the Effing World. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Consequence of Sound's YouTube channel to keep up with your favorite artists and interviews. And for you podcast fans, head over to iTunes, Podchaser, give us a rating and a review. And wherever you are, please do hit the subscribe button. And then head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.